today, Trump. Man, Trump has gone over all around the world, you know, world tour with Muhammad, his man, literally. Trump is on a world tour with Muhammad, his man, going each and every place with Melania won't take his hand. Oh, I'm so clever. I'm so clever. I just blow my own mind. But anyway, so Trump goes to the Middle East and Italy. He visits the home of Islam and Christianity, Judaism, and then Protestantism and Catholicism. You know, it's pretty symbolic. It's all mythology, though. It's all a bunch of mythology. But one thing Trump did do to the world, which I think is most significant, is that he pretty much, with this international trip, pretty much concluded, he pretty much admitted to the world that, hey, I'm not bringing any more hope and change than Obama brought. I am status quo. The global status quo, the Sunni, Islamic, Wahhabist, Saudi Arabian oligarchs, the oil oligarchs, the Zionist elite aggressors, the WASP, white Anglo-Saxon, which he comes from, and the Catholic elite pedophilic global network. He went to all the centers of ideological, cultural, and even economic resource power and said, hey, don't get all caught up in my rhetoric about making America great again, renegotiating trade deals, about American non-interference in the affairs of foreign nations. That's just talk for my rednecks, for the hillbillies, for the good old boys, for the crackers. That's just good talk for good old people. But when it comes down to it, I'm an elite. I'm a globalist. I'm not renegotiating trade deal. I'm not going to end NAFTA. What I look like? So I guess Trump made some people nervous with that rhetoric. Trump is like, well, he wants to return America back to its protectionist. Just like, hey, I'm going to govern within the borders of the United States. I'm going to stop, you know, feeding imperialist agendas. I'm going to stop cooperating with genocidal regimes, with oppressive regimes in Israel and Saudi Arabia. What I look like? Homie, don't play that. So everybody can rest assured. And here's another good news for you Obama supporters. Everybody that was like, oh, Lord, I'm going to miss Obama. Obama's back. Obama's agenda. Obama's alliances. Obama's priorities. They're back in the manifestation of Trump. Trump has just demonstrated to the world in this first trip that he is like a prototypical American politician. It will be business as usual, that status quo will be preserved, that all of his rhetoric that tricked a lot of supposedly conscious Negroes, a lot of conscious Negroes was like, yes, and Trump is going to be a game changer, sure. There will be new opportunities for Trump. Trump's going to kick out all the immigrants, and then all the jobs that the immigrants are kicked out of will be magically handed over, will be coated in chocolate, sprinkled with sprinkles, and handed over to black people. As if there ain't no Eastern European immigrants, which they don't even acknowledge. You know, but like I said, you go to any construction site, the people who ain't Mexican, you think they white men. Nope. You walk over there and say, comrade, and they'll all, you know, give you a communist salute. You know, Ukraine, all the stands, Uzbekistan. All the Stan nation, all the Balkan nations, all the Slavic nations after the fall of the Iron Curtain. So even though there's a whole new batch of immigrants to come take your job, and even you well-learned stemmed Negroes, you homeschool weirdo kids who got all the leg up, who were reading at the fifth grade level by the time you were an embryo. All of y'all, even for the good jobs, y'all think y'all going to step on our shoulders and climb out the barrel, stepping on our heads and climb out the crab barrel, you know, and I think the crabs at the top are worse than the crabs at the bottom because they stepping on everybody. But anyway, you crabs at the top of the barrel, they bring in, you know, them HB1 visas? What is them special tech visas? So you show up with your STEM degree, say, listen, I obeyed myself. I didn't get into no trouble. I didn't get entangled in no radical crazy ideas. I didn't become a Moor, a Muslim, or a radical. So I'm here, and I got this suit. I speak standard English, and I'm ready for a good job that I've worked hard and earned. But they got people from India who's like, listen, I could do the same job, and I'm willing to take one-tenth the rate. What do you need? Computer engineering? Architecture? What? So even then. And now we all got to go fall back on Biggie Smalls, rest his fat soul. You slanging crack rock or you got a wicked jump shot? That's all you got left. What else is it? Because, like, I mean, most Def said, we start keeping pace, they change up the tempo. I don't even know why we trying to join this fight. Like the Rasta man, my Wash the Brethren said, even if you win the rat race, you're still a rat. So, and I know it's a rabbit hole, and I'm sorry. And I see the exit, and I'm taking it. So, all these Negroes, you know, your girl Yvette, and a lot of other black conscious, supposedly conscious or aware or critical thinking black folks that were like, Trump is going to kick out the immigrants, which will be, and even Claude Anderson. And I respect Claude Anderson. I've donated money to Claude Anderson's black think tank. Every book this man has published is on my shelf and is well read and marked and highlighted and noted, annotated. I respect Claude Anderson. But I think there are a lot of fatal terminal flaws in his overall statement. You know, so and that was one of the things. The Negroes were like, well, Trump was going to kick out all the immigrants and build a wall. And we thought for somehow that was going to fit because the wall to kick them out is the same wall to keep us in. I don't want no walls. I prefer keep the borders open in both directions because you never know. They thought Trump was going to build a wall and black people could take advantage. There'll be new days and new opportunities for black people under the Trump regime. And what else did these black Trumpites would say? The trumpeters. They said that Trump was going to end the trade deals. Well, now they're trying to get fast track trade authority for Trump. Man, y'all played y'allself. And I'm saying, and like I said, and I know, like Wu-Tang, the Bro Diallo show is for the children. So I don't like to be crass, but sometimes when you're talking about despicable conditions and reality, sometimes you got to use that language in order to get your point across. And I was anti-Hillary. I didn't vote for Hillary. I am not a Democrat. I have never been a registered Democrat. All that. Dump the Dems. Hashtag dump the Dems. Yeah, all of that. But that ain't mean I got to get on Trump's little, you know, orange Cheeto. I ain't got to swing from his little, you know. I ain't got to swing from his toupee. Let me say that. I ain't got to swing from Trump's toupee just because I'm anti-Hillary. I ain't got to pick syphilis over gonorrhea. I could reject it all. And what did we say last week? Even if you subject me to it, you're not going to get my participation. I'm not going to cooperate with it. So I might not be able to avoid it, but I'm sure not going to run to it either. That's all I'm saying. So quit listening to these Negroes that are trying to spin this Trump thing. And here's the thing about Trump. Trump is a fascist demagogue. So Trump will be very attractive to a lot of black people because we have a lot of fascist black demagogues. You know, I swear to you. And again, I know it's a broken record. I said this before and maybe, you know, you didn't hear me. If you take Trump's fundamental positions, if you take the religious rights, the white nationalist fundamental positions, and you take away the white, you take away the Nordic, Aryan, Caucasus Mountain elements of it, but leave everything else there, that stuff fits very comfortably in the white into black, many black nationalists, black militant, black Islamic ideology. It's identical. What do they say? Look at Focus on the Family. Look at the Heritage Foundation. And then look at these black capitalists. Look at these black moralists, these black Puritans. It's identical. Strengthen the family. The gays are the end of the world. Not the polluting of our atmosphere. Not the acidification of the oceans. Not the just pumping gigatons of carbon into the upper atmosphere every damn year. No, that's not. It's men in dresses are the end of humanity. So they have the same priorities, the same essential outlook. And I swear to you, if these white nationalists, if the system of global white domination carved out a little piece of territory and space and reserved a little segment of the economy for these black demagogues to have free reign, the conflict would be over. And everything else remained the same. If they had their own little fiefdoms of domination, if they gave Umar his school, that would be it. If they gave these, you know, and I hate to say it, but it's true. And how do we know? Because we can go to Africa. We can go to Africa in post-colonial Africa. Africa started the decolonizing move in 1948. And by 1960, 1980, the dominoes of direct colonization fell, and you had black prime ministers, black ministers of defense, black education ministers, you know, black bankers, and all this blackety black, black, black. And many of these black people were militant blacks, were anti-colonial guerrilla fighters, like in the case of Mugabe. You know, you had a lot of black people rise to power and run the white man out. And the average black citizen, the average black man, woman, and child, and elder did not see any appreciable change in their standard of living. It was all but identical. So black fascism, black nationalism, black patriarchy, black capitalism has proven to be no better for black folks than white. And I don't know, maybe if you are a pro-black person, because some of y'all really felt that Obama's drone bombs were better than Bush's drone bombs. And y'all really felt that Obama's talking down to black folks and pandering to dog whistle racist politics and Obama's subservience to the Zionist state was better than Bush's or Clinton's or Trump's. So maybe some of y'all, maybe y'all got y'all pro, more pro-black than I can be. Because me, I ain't going to celebrate black oppression. I'm not going to celebrate Negroes in positions of power who conduct themselves just like our former or current oppressors. But some of y'all, maybe y'all pro-blackness is stronger than mine. Because if y'all like black boot on your neck over a white boot, then you got a level of pro-blackness that I wish I had. But I'm not pro-black enough. I'm not pan-African enough to celebrate African tyrants, African oligarchs, African kleptocrats to me. And maybe it's the little Tom on my shoulder. I got a little nationalist on one shoulder. But to me, black oppression is worse than white oppression. Because that's my brother. I expect more of you. I mean, that's how I was raised. You're supposed to expect more from your own people. You're supposed to have higher standards. So I did. I expected more from Obama. Even though I just knew in my heart we weren't going to get better, I still couldn't help but expect more. And people would even say that, oh, all the other presidents didn't do this. Obama wasn't the first president to do that. Yeah, true. All of that. But when I'm talking to my brother, even if my brother do me wrong, I'm still going to maintain a higher standard for my own people, have higher exploitation, because I have a higher level of loyalty. I have a higher level of commitment. I ain't ashamed to say it. Black first. Black, you know. I'll tell you, I quote Richard Pryor, one of my favorite quotes. Richard Pryor said, I don't want white folks to win nothing. You know, and if they win, it ain't because I'm rooting for them. So, hey, yes, I have a bias. So, yes, and because I give more to my own, I expect more from my own. But the people that was like, how you going to ask Obama not to be a serial killer? Because you can't be president without being a serial killer. Because if I went and put my hand on Jefferson's Bible, you know, the Bible he used, I don't know if he used it before or after he raped our ancestors, whether he prayed to God for strength to rape our ancestors, or after he raped our ancestors, he prayed to God for forgiveness after rape. I don't know how he used his Bible, but that's the Jefferson Bible. I don't know. If I was elected president, I wouldn't swear on the Bible. Or that one Muslim congressman, he would swear on the, he swore in on the Quran. That was also Thomas Jefferson on the Quran. So I would have to say, what do atheists swear in on? Do we swear in on, like, origin of the species? I solemnly swear to the microorganisms and the single-cell simple organisms that gave birth to all complex life forms through the process of evolution to uphold the Constitution. I don't know. We'll see. When I run for office, we'll find out what atheists swear in on. You know. But that being said, if I became president and they came into the Situation Room and they were like, well, we got evidence of movements in this area. We got a long range missile. We got a tow missile. We got a Scud. We got a drone. We ready to drop. I'm like, I'm not dropping that bomb. How you know? How you know? You don't know. You don't know. So no, I'm not dropping the bomb. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to have that on my conscience. I got to go get into bed, you know, with my wife. I got to go sit across from the dinner table and eat vegan chili with my children, knowing that I signed off on murdering people for no reason. That's not how, because these people, now, number one, the United States is not at war. There is no formal declaration of war. Therefore, anybody committing an act of terrorism is essentially defined as a criminal, not as an enemy combatant, not as an opposing force. And only states can declare war. I cannot declare war for the United States. So if I took guns and bombs and even assassinated the leader of any other foreign nation, that nation could not formally declare war against the United States. Even if I say I'm an American and I'm representing America, until the United States Senate and Congress, and United States Congress, House of Representatives and Senate, make the declaration of war and pass a declaration of war, the United States is officially not at war. So if I go overseas and do that, I'm defined as a criminal. And even if I come back to the United States, they can say, well, we're going to extradite Diallo back to Scandinavia. We're going to send Diallo back to Uruguay or wherever I committed my act. And you can prosecute him as a criminal. You can't come bomb the United States for the something its citizen. So the United States is not at war. So if somebody commits a crime, somebody goes to a neighborhood, commits a crime, and then runs back to their neighborhood, you can't bomb their neighborhood unless they're in the MOVE organization. But aside from the MOVE organization, they're not supposed to bomb the whole neighborhood because a criminal. You go in and investigate. You go identify that person. You take that person into custody. So that's what I'd be like. Listen, y'all better contact the U.S. Embassy, the person on the ground in Saudi Arabia and Afghanistan and Pakistan and Yemen and all the places the United States is bombing. They're not bombing Saudi Arabia. They're giving Saudi Arabia, the oligarchs, the munitions to kill their own people. So even the Saudi Arabian oppression is proxy U.S. oppression. But more on that later. So you go, I would be like, well, you, number one, we can't send Asians. That's a sovereign nation. So do we have good relationships with their, you know, government? Do they have an intelligence and policing agents? Can they issue a warrant? Let's go to the international community like civilized people and secure a warrant. Let's fight for extradition. Let's, you know, do we have certain political prisoners? Do we have something they want? Can we negotiate so they can turn that individual over, or maybe have someone question that individual, take him into custody and question him, and we'll ask permission for one of our U.S. representative, U.S. agents to be present during the questioning and maybe submit some questioning. International law, be civilized. Obama's a tyrant. Obama was a savage. Obama is a war criminal. Obama is a serial killer. And I couldn't be president. Because if I do that, and then the news comes on and says, well, President Kenyatta, who was swore in on a copy of Origin of Species by Charles Darwin, because he didn't want to prey on the semen, the rape semen soaked Bible of Thomas Jefferson or George Jefferson. I didn't want to pay on the rape semen soaked. I don't know why they would be so. I mean, because like I said, I would assume that serial rapists, like slave owners, were, if they were flipping through the Bible, whatever. This show is for the children. Let me clean that up. On the blood soaked Bible, is that better? So I pray, and they say, well, President Kenyatta said that he wants to take an investigative approach. He wants to take a diplomatic approach. And then everybody's going to be like, this is America. This is America. So we want to bomb. Bomb everybody. You threaten us. You take actions against the American country. We're going to bomb the country. But the United States takes actions against and violates the rights and terrorizes and kills citizens of other nations, violates the sovereignty of other nations all the time, and they can't come bomb here. And then you know, oh, that ain't right. And there's all kind of memorials. So I would just obey international law. In fact, I think international law on paper, just like the Constitution, even the tenets of the the UN, that stuff is really good stuff. You should read it. I know your eyes are going to roll. You know, they had a convention on genocides, the rights of the child, the convention on women. There's a lot of good documents out there. It's just nobody's obeying them because a document can't shoot you. So if a person shows up with a document and another person shows up with a gun, you're going to listen to the guy with the gun. Especially if the guy with the gun is telling, giving you different instructions than the guy with the paper. I'm like, don't worry. This paper will protect you. It's not bulletproof paper. So there's a lot of good documents. So if I was president, I would obey the rule of law. That would be a start. Of course, before, I would be what Obama said they was. I'd be a Mau Mau Kenyan socialist, you know, bent on destroying America. That would be my side agenda. But while I was working that in the background, I would be on the surface if I had to show up. You know, I would most definitely, unapologetically, just obey the rule of law. And Obama didn't do that. But I wouldn't be eligible for president because I would follow all of the, I would stay within the restrictions of the executive branch. I would immediately end the war on terror and say there is no official declaration of war. I would withdraw all U.S. troops from all non-U.S. territories. Close the base in Korea, close the base in Okinawa, close the base that was set up in Germany. I would shut down the base, and then I would start paying reparations. The money I'd save from deploying all these soldiers all over the world, I would start paying reparations to every nation that the U.S. has bombed, to every nation that the U.S. has contaminated. Yes, because the military is highly polluting. It's one of the biggest polluters. And they're trying to go green, which is frightening to me. They're trying to go green. One of the most green, one of the most highly polluting sectors of the U.S. economy is the military. And one of the greenest aspects, you know, solar powered death, you know, that's what they're trying to give us. Wind and solar powered massive industrial systematic death. That's why green ain't enough. You need a ideological revolution. You need a third world revolution. It ain't enough just to go green because you can be green. And you know who was green? Hitler was very green. Hitler was a vegan. Hitler had a wonderful. Just go back. And again, this is one thing about our oppressors. We very lucky. We have an oppressor that was really into writing stuff down. They're really big. I mean, if you got a job working for white folks, you know, documentation is king. Like I said, they don't know. Follow their documents, but they want their damn documents. Even Trump's dumbass doing all this illegal stuff. I got tapes, you dumbass. That's the last thing you want. What are you doing? I'm sorry, my wife followed me into the studio, you know, because all you radio group, all you talk, political talk radio groupies, just hang back today because she's here. So just hang back. I get with y'all later. The glamorous life. But where else? You knocked me off my... What was I talking about? But don't be going in my back. This is my temple. You know, I don't come to your job and indoctrinate your students. You come to my job distracting me. Anyway, that ain't even what I was supposed to talk about. But Trump is out of the country. The masses is off the plantation and he took his mistress with him. What can we accomplish? What can we do in that little pocket of time where the boss man ain't here? Can we play? What can we accomplish? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Say it again now. Revolution, huh? When is it coming? Absolutely never. Say it again now. But anyway, I'm glad you're distracting me. Maybe I can get back on my topic. Because I tried announcing the topic because people would jump down my throat and be like, what are you talking about? You know? And so I'm like, well, maybe I should start announcing. So today I was supposed to talk about the Middle East. So I'm in the arena. I'm in the ballpark. I'm supposed to talk about the Middle East, why Africans should oppose Zionism, and black revolutionary leadership. And I've been going in on leadership for the last couple of shows. And what leadership is and what leadership shouldn't be. Because I made a post saying that critiquing black leaders. And black people really thought that, and I see that a lot of black folks say, if you have leadership that you don't like, you can address it. Corrupt leadership, incompetent leadership, stagnant leadership, dysfunctional leadership, compromised leadership. If you have leadership that you don't like, then you can just deny that they're your leader, and that exempts you. And there's a lot of people that think that, which kind of blew my mind. Because, I mean, conscious people, you know, I can see the masses, you know, but people who are supposed to be engaged, who are supposed to be doing the work for black empowerment, black redemption, black liberation and all that, they really have a lot of behaviors of what you would call the so-called uneducated, unwashed masses. You know, a lot of 5%ers be acting like 85ers and be striving to be 10%ers, you know. And so a lot of the 5%ers, the poor righteous teachers, the enlightened members of society, enlightened members of our community, you know, they're just cosmetically awake. They have the right lingo. They have the right rhetoric. They have the right clothing. They know I don't celebrate no Christmas, and they say Habari Kani for Kwanzaa and Moja Karamu instead of Thanksgiving. They got all the cosmetic, but when you look, when you peel back the kente cloth and the mud cloth, when you wipe away the patchouli, you know, when you lift up the crystals and copper, their fundamental mentality is just like they're irrational. They're deep-seated into belief and feelings. So anyway, I would make a statement about black leadership, and everybody's like, that's not my leader. I ain't got no leaders. Blacks don't have leaders. Black people, we have leaders, well-defined, well-established, well-entrenched leaders. And not only do we have leaders, those leaders have agendas. And those agendas are active and dominant. And those agendas and those leaderships get passed down generation after generation. And simply denying the fact that they're leaders does not exempt you. I don't like Sharpton. I don't support the National Action Network. I ain't never shown up at a Sharpton rally or something. But I know when I was living in New York, my life as a black man was directly impacted by the actions of the National Action Network and its leader, Al Sharpton. And unless you're a psychopath or a sociopath, you'll know that what affects your greater community, even if you're not directly vested in that, affects you. I'm a vegan. I do not smoke nor do I consume, you know, alcohol. But I know the presence of the unhealthy food, the marketing, the over representation of black people amongst smokers. We're some of the highest percentage of smokers, and how they target black people and they target poor people for cigarette and these low quality alcohol. And like, if you got a drink, you know, be like my man D-Dan, get your foo-foo, organic, you know, indie label, artsy beers. You know, get your organic, locally produced wine, non-GMO wine. There's ways to drink. There's ways to do it. If you're going to smoke, smoke, toke, toke, you know, get your marijuana. You know, get smoke of the herb, you know, if you must. There's ways to do it. There's ways to reach that altered state of consciousness. But I know, even though I don't participate, I am not exempt from the social and economic and cultural impacts of the behaviors. Even if I don't, because I am invested and I am embedded in my community. I am an empathetic being. So as my people suffer from issues that don't even directly affect me, I suffer. So if my people suffer and follow inept leadership, when I hate leaving my house on Sunday morning, and it ain't just because I'm lazy. But the other reason I don't like getting up early and leaving my house on a Sunday morning is because I can't pass a church that don't have an overflowing full parking lot. I can't. And I don't care if it's a mega church or one of them rinkety-dink, musty storefront churches. Every church in the hood is way, because these men are instructing, guiding, influencing, and leading my community. These irrational, often corrupt, often incompetent, often unqualified men are leaders in my community. And even if I'm not a personal follower, if I am not a personal member, those are leaders within my community. If you have such sway over my larger community, then it's going to impact. Like if I became a leader in your community, if I became the black leader, and I'm telling black folks, we're going to go vegan, we're going to go organic, just one thing. And then the large 60% of the community becomes vegan and organic. That's going to directly impact the lifestyles of you people who still like to gnaw on gristle and suck on bones. The market will change. The atmosphere will change. You know, your ability to navigate and engage your own relatives is going to be altered and adjusted. So even though you be like, I don't follow President Kenyatta because he swore in on the origin of the species. He follows the white man's religion of atheism. That's what y'all tell me, that atheism is a white man's religion. Fine. I follow the white man's religion. Fine. I take it. Whatever. Atheism is white. I don't care. It's correct. And, you know, give me African white atheism over African Christianity or Islam any day. I said it. Take it to the bank. Deposit it. And then overdraft the account. I don't give a damn. Right is right. I know it ain't white, but if y'all want to say it, fine. Let's run with that. Sorry about that rabbit hole. But if you be like, I'm not a follower of Diallo. Diallo ain't my leader. But once I get control over, it don't even take a majority. If I can control 20% of your community under my sway, under my influence, it will directly impact your life. And I may not be your leader, but I am a leader. And if you're against and oppose what I stand for, you have to acknowledge my power and influence before you can properly counter it. If you deny my power and influence, that makes me even stronger. It's like a tumor growing in your gut. It may be small, and you'd be like, I don't claim that cancer. You know, you better claim it, you better acknowledge it, and you better realize how detrimental it is to you, even though all your other cells are healthy and ain't cancerous. So my whole thing was to acknowledge this leadership and then you can counter it. And I don't mean to repeat Friday and Wednesday, last Wednesday shows, but I mean, this is something that's very serious because we've got a lot of entrenched leaders for life in our community that are accelerating us towards the cliff of genocidal oblivion. And many of our people, too many of our people are too stupid to even take a stance against these leaders. And a lot of our people who are intelligent enough to reject these leaders don't take the proper action to subvert or counter their leadership. We just think denying their leadership is enough. That ain't my leader. I don't follow no Al Sharpton. I don't follow no Farrakhan. I don't follow no Jesse Jackson. I don't follow no Christianity. I don't follow no Islam. I'm conscious. I'm my own leader. That's what some other people say. I'm my own leader. You know, that's not how it works. That's not how leadership works. And I think if we acknowledge how leadership and hierarchies work, then we can start to, but as long as we can start to construct functional leaderships. I'm not, you know, I'm a socialist. And the socialist theory says that if you properly apply socialism, then the condition that you will create is anarchism. Because if as you know, sharing and cooperation becomes the core of the economy, then it will really be no need for any hierarchy. So a socialist is just a patient anarchist. And an anarchist is just a socialist in a hurry. To you know, if you follow me. But even that being said, I realize that under oppression, under this current system, under these current institutions, we're going to have to form hierarchies. We're going to have to, you know, it's going to have to be militarist and hierarchical formations that are given a certain level of authority and our level of trust and cooperation in order to get out of this. Because the oppressor sets the nature of the struggle. You can't define how you will struggle against oppression once you fall under oppression. And that's another thing. We think we can dictate how we will liberate ourselves. That's not how it works. And I know it sounds good. And believe you me, I would love if that were the case. I really believe my mind is free. You came there. If you don't have a poverty mentality, if you don't have a victim mentality, then you're free. That's not how freedom works. Freedom don't give a damn about your mentality. You know, and guess what else don't give a damn about your mentality? Your belly, your stomach don't give a damn. A hungry belly. A hungry mind is a hungry mind. So you got to come back down to earth. Now, you can engage, because I'm all for letting the mind wander. Listen to my back shows. Let your mind wander. But when it comes time to functional activities, you got to come back to your toes, need to grip the soil. That's what Che Guevara said. The revolutionary carries his nation in the soil between his toes. You got to come back to earth. Because all them crazy ideas is just that. And I just really annoys me for people to try to, you know, use ethereal imaginings as real world, you know, realities. And it just ain't the case. So we just come back down to reality. And here's the thing about reality. It's so magnificent. It's so wondrous. I don't know why you got to pretend like there's some supernatural beings, some interdimensional contact, the real world. I mean, just go look at an earthworm and how an earthworm functions. I mean, that stuff blows my mind. I don't need angels and demons and reptilian, you know, I don't need reptilian overlords from outer space, you know, sitting in the sub basement of the Federal Reserve. I don't need to imagine that. It's just the brutal little thugs that came over here and took something that don't belong to them. It's not that complex. So reality is really dope. You don't have to try to go beyond it. You could spend 50 lifetimes just understanding the concrete realities of the world. You don't have to invent answers. You can spend your life getting confirmed answers to what's really real. You don't have to invent fantasies. Even though anybody that knows me will tell you, I like my post-apocalyptic literature and movies. I like my comics and my mythological creatures. I like all of that. But I understand there's not just a thin line. There's a big, thick Trump wall between fantasy and reality. And neither the twain shall meet. Now, on the side of reality, you can engage in ideological thinking. You can engage in, you know, wondrous imaginings. Like a world where everybody has health care. I know that's just very unrealistic. People believe in God more than they believe that we can get universal health care. You know, believe that, you know, the Palestinians and the Native Americans will get their lands back. You can have fanciful ideas, but the fanciful ideas must have a realistic, confirmable material root. And once you're grounded in reality, believe away and work for those achievements. But if your fundamental grounding reality is the Lord will make a way somehow when here beneath the cross I bow, anything you build on that is destined to fail and crumble. And as it falls and crumbles, there will be all kinds of other, you know, collateral damage because of that. And I'm sorry, but I don't know why we would allow our oppressors to tell us that the real world, the material world, is not wondrous, is not worth our full engagement, that can't inspire us and drive us and give us hope and allow us to dream, all while looking at molecules and elements, periodic table. Now that blows my mind. Get that Bible out my face, and the Quran and the Torah. I'd rather study the damn periodic table. That gives me more hope and inspiration than the damn holy books. And I'm saying, if our struggle ain't secular, we just re-enslaving ourselves. You're just rearranging, you know, you're just painting the bars on your cage. You know, you paint, go from gray bars to our red, black, and green bars, but you're still in the cage. You know. So anyway, it's about time for a music break. And I didn't just, you know, hinted at my topics. But when I come back, I really do want to talk about black folks in Zionism, because we got a lot of black people, because, you know, Trump went over and kissed the ring of Netanyahu, and he kissed the ring of the Saudi oligarchs. And then for you people who are into the Masonic conspiratorial, he even went to there to visit the Pope. And I'm pretty sure you numerologists, Moorish conspiracy-oriented people, y'all going to have a field day with this, about his hand gestures and how he's standing and imagining how he's wearing his Masonic apron under his tuxedo. Or, I mean, I bet you Trump wears a girdle. Which I'll bet. Even though he still looks I bet you he wears a girdle. Oh, but let me stop that, because I learned a new word. Sister, I learned a new term called fat phobia. Did you know there was a such thing as fat phobia? You know, so I've been getting some extra instruction. You learn every day. You learn every day. Just keep your mind open. You learn every day. But there's some things we need to unlearn too. So anyway, Bro Diallo Show. AM 1680, right? Anyway, and you can call in, because we're live and direct. Now we're live and direct. 312-985-7834. So if you want to call in, if you want to join the discussion, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about why African people should oppose Zionism. And we might revisit black revolutionary leadership in the Middle East. And then what we don't get to today, there's always tomorrow. And if it ain't till tomorrow, then what does it matter anyway, right? All right, Bro Diallo Show, AM 1680, Chi-topia.
Until we find our way to move on, yeah. Our love for each other will have to improve. They say roots rock reggae, got the groove, y'all. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Middle East,
the Middle East,
it starts from there. It's a third world slaughter, heading for the west frontier. Yeah, until we find our way to leave the west. Oh yes, our love for each other must be the strongest. So much doctrine, so much opinion. Oh yes, but it's one job, one glory, the highest region. Watch the Middle East,
the Middle East,
it's going on there. It's a third world slaughter, heading for the west frontier. We'll be right back.
Yeah. The topic before us is one which I feel rather confident in. 1965, working for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, I was, through another member, a female member of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, presented the topic of Zionism. This female member of SNCC happened to have come in contact while working in South America with Palestinian forces. I myself had no scientific understanding of Zionism, and I started within the circle of SNCC quietly, unbeknown to certain elements. We had every month we read one book on Zionism, and since 1965 to today, at least, I read one book a month on concerning Zionism, or broaden it out, of course, the history of Judaism. I have attended many anti-Zionist international symposiums in Baghdad, in Tripoli. I have attended many meetings of the Palestine National Council Corporation, Palestine National Council, Congress, Palestine National Congress. And, of course, I've had great working relationships with anti-Zionist forces within the Jewish community. In order for us to properly understand the topic, a clear delineation must be made between Judaism and Zionism. I understand that this creates certain problems in certain forces, certain elements within the society. But even if one doesn't agree with my statement, at least one should understand the general outlines which allows me to arrive at the statements that I do. Of course, Judaism is a religion. And we know that religions, of course, Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels in the Communist Manifesto said that religion is the opium of the masses of the people. Of course, this statement is correct in the particular instance of Europe. It is not correct, generally speaking. The error that is made by those who have been dominated by Europe is that the particular history of Europe usually becomes the general history of the world, and this certainly should not be done. We said in the particular instance where Marx and Engels both said that religion is the opium of the masses of the people, they were correct for Europe. If one would look properly at Europe, one would see that Europe has never produced any universal religion. All universal religions that have come to Europe have come from the outside: Judaism, Islam, Christianity. One would also look that the question of religious differences in Europe is dominantly intolerant. That is to say, they burn Jews at the stake, they burn Muslims at the stake, they burn Christians at the stake, they burn non-believers at the stake. Outside of Europe, certainly in Africa, which we may use an example, the problem of religious intolerance, the problem of religious differences is not dominantly intolerant, but dominantly tolerant. That is not to say that in Africa one does not find religious conflict here and there, but it is not the normal way of life. Thus, this question is particular to Europe. The question of Zionism, too, will have a lot to do with the particular history of Europe, not with the particular history of areas outside of Europe, and particularly Africa. Of course, this question of Judaism as a religion is necessary for us to understand. As a revolutionary, I understand, unlike Mr. Marx and Mr. Engels, that religion is not the opium of the masses, but on the contrary, religion must be used as an arm by the revolutionary forces. Certainly, our history has demonstrated this, just since we're speaking all the time of Martin Luther King as a clear example. But even if you go back from our history, you will find those who've been inspired to fight for the people, that their motivations come from religious inspiration. So, we then, as revolutionaries, do not consider religion to be the opium of the masses, not us. We say the position here is entirely different in Africa. The religion of Judaism and Zionism must be, the religion of Judaism and the political philosophy of Zionism must be completely separated. Judaism is a religion. As an African, I'm very proud of this religion because it was given to the world by my people. Judaism began in Africa. We must be clear here. Of course, forces seeking everywhere to stalk nonsense will make it appear as if Africa didn't give Judaism to the world, but others came from the outside and gave it to Africa. This is nonsense, bourgeois lies, and racist manipulation against Africa. Africa gave monotheism to the world, belief in one God. And at the time that Africa gave monotheism to the world, belief in one God, every other area surrounding Africa were believing in cows, were believing in moons, were believing in the sun. It was Africa and Africa alone that gave monotheism to the world. That is why Judaism had to be born in Africa. It presented the proper conditions for Judaism to be born there. Sigmund Freud, in his book, Moses and Monotheism, his last book and the book usually hidden. It's hard to get, and I don't see why. I find the book to be a particularly interesting book and the conditions under which it were written. Mr. Freud began to write the book, I believe, in Austria. And because of Nazi occupation, he had to leave, and he took all the notes with him and went to Britain and hurried very much to write the book. Of course, this book, The Moses and Monotheism, here Freud comes to show through archaeological proofs, Freud comes to show through historical proof, so Freud comes to throw through psychoanalytical proof that Judaism began in Africa, and not only this, that Moses himself was an African. Of course, the early priests of the religion were Africans, as they had to be. They were the ones who recorded the religion. Thus, when I take a position against Zionism, for example, when I hear people tell me that I'm anti-Semitic, which makes no sense at all because Judaism has nothing to do with Semitic people, one is a religion, the other is a biological specification, and the Palestinians certainly are Semitic. Mr. Arafat is a Semite. So if I support the Palestinians, I cannot be anti-Semitic, that's clear. But this is all confusion here, and this confusion is well done to keep people more confused. But we're revolutionaries, and we believe in dialectics. Out of confusion comes clarity. Because our time is limited and we want a lot of time for questions, we want to make it clear. Judaism was given to the world by Africa. This is clear and undeniable fact. Those who wish to look at the history and we can develop it, look. Zionism is a political philosophy. It did not come out of Africa. The first organizational conference of Zionism, if my memory serves me correctly, was in 1897 in a place called Bals, Switzerland. Balse. The reason why this meeting had to be held in Bals, Switzerland, was because the majority of Orthodox Jewry in Europe was against Zionism, totally against it.
All right, that was our great ancestor, scientific socialist, revolutionary, African repatriate, Kwame Ture, speaking against Zionism and giving some historical and ideological groundings for Zionism. And what kind of became a shocker to me, because throughout the 70s, throughout the 60s, really dating back to the 40s, you know, the late 40s and forward, the black conscious community, the black revolutionary community, the pan-African community, the black nationalist community pretty much had a stance against Zionism, you know. And for many reasons. Number one, Zionism was always a staunch ally of Western imperialism. The state of Israel was an ally of the apartheid state of South Africa, and stayed with South Africa and united with South Africa until the bitter end. And so if you will find very few, if any, revolution, even Minister Farrakhan and Nation of Islam, any black militant, black nationalist-oriented organization or individual has always took a stand against Zionism. Kwame Ture was just one of many. Professor William Mackey, Brother Dale Jones, Dr. Ben, Dr. John Henry Clark, Chancellor Williams, John G. Jackson, Marimba Ani, Dr. Amos Wilson, you will be very hard pressed to find an African revolutionary, an African scholar, a righteous African-centered African scholar who did not take a stance against the Zionist movement. But in this era, I'm finding, in this modern era, you have a lot of black people who, number one, are either neutral on the issue of Palestine, Israel, and Zionism, and you even now have this emerging group of people who are even quasi, like, they won't, it's kind of like with Trump. They won't come out and say, I am a Zionist, I support Zionism, but they, like, try to act like, well, it ain't none of our business, or I don't care because the Arabs enslaved Africans, forget the Palestinians. And all this other kind of rhetoric, like, well, I know Trump don't like us, but he's going to get rid of the Mexicans, and the Mexicans are taking our jobs, and this. And so you have these black people who support fascism, who support white nationalism, who support white imperialism, in the name of black interest. And if you have a black person who in any way can somehow rationalize or articulate that their interests align with the interests of our longstanding and most aggressive enemies, then know that they're running a con game. They're nothing but integrationist Negroes. No matter how much they talk about they hate whitey or whatever they else other type black nationalist, black militant rhetoric they want to spew. Understand, they're running a con game. Because anybody that, and there's so many of these black scholars who are trying to get on this Trump train, who's trying to spin, literally spin, rework Trump's agenda to be somehow, if not directly, in favor of black people, indirectly beneficial to the black community. And those people are running a con game. You know, I once had an affluent black person say, you know, I'm a Republican. And the reason I'm a Republican is if you join the Democrats, you put a little money up at the Democrats, you show up at the Democratic Party events, it's an ocean of black people. But if you join the Republicans, you stand out because you're the only black person there and you're able to have more sway and you're able to have more influence. And I'm like, huh, that sounds so let me. And I looked into that. It's like maybe if black people started, you know, doing the you know, footsies with the Republicans, maybe we can have more influence of the party because we're not taken for granted there. But what I come to find out is black Republicans, the only thing you're going to get out of Republican is some personal benefit, and only if you're willing to embrace the larger racist Republican agenda. So it's a lie. It's a selfish, at best selfish, at worst treasonous position to say I'm a black Republican. And there's no other way to spin it. And yes, just check my reviews. I don't have to get into my criticisms of the Democrats, you know, because people are so stupid, menticidal, that if you're talking, if you're criticizing the Republicans, then you must be a Democrat. If you're criticizing the Democrats, then you must be a Republican, because those are the two options Massa gave us. So if them are the two options we're given, what other options could there be? The oppressor defines reality. So anyway, you know, whenever I speak on behalf or express solidarity with the Palestinian cause, I got people, all them Arabs, how can you? You're anti-Islam. You know, you always are talking about the Arab slave trade, and you can't talk about the Arab slave trade in past tense, just like you can't talk about U.S. slavery. You know, just read Samuel Cotton, Silent Terror, and try to get through that book without choking up. If you wanted them really attuned brothers and your chakras are all aligned, you're not going to get to that book without shedding tears. Even Samuel Cotton said, you know, when he was writing the book, after he went and visited his first encampment of enslaved Africans, he said he went back to his hotel room and just collapsed and cried the whole night. And this is a grown ass man because of what he experienced. And he didn't know these were current contemporary conditions. And there's another really good book called Disposable People about the world system of global slavery. There are millions of people still enslaved. You're not going to have capitalism without slavery. You know, now capitalism has gotten really good at justifying and burying slavery. No, he's not a slave. He's a convicted felon incarcerated. So we can coerce him to work. She's not a slave. She gets a starvation wage and she can quit if she wants to. So how can you be a slave if you can quit the job? If you're quitting a job means starvation, then you're enslaved. So slavery, and you know, nobody pushes to the fore the reality and the relationship and the longstanding involvement of the Islamic world in African enslavement and enslavement of other non-Africans, but African enslavery in particular. Nobody stands up and says that North Africa is under colonial occupation. You know, it's like Dr. John Henry Clark said, if you're in Africa and can't be identified as an African, you are an invader or you're the child of an invader. There's no other people. There's invaders and Africans. Those are the only people in Africa right now. Those are the only two people. So if you're not an African, then you're an invader. Like the United States is a little different. You got invaders and you've got forced migrants. We didn't come here voluntarily, and every time we've tried to leave, the government has organized to subvert our exodus. So we were forced to come here, and we were undermined when we tried to leave. So we're not invaders, and we're not immigrants, and we're not natives. And I said it, Morris. And you just carry on. Morris, I'm sorry, you're not Indian, but that's okay. Because the Indians are great. Yeah, I look at the Indians and look at their culture and history, be like, wow, that's cool. I'd like to be down with that. Yeah, but I got my own thing. And I don't have to pretend that I'm you just to give respect to you. But that, let's not go down that rabbit hole. My goodness, that silly fez-infested rabbit hole. So, but here's the thing about that. Number one, Africans have always set the standard for struggle. And I don't just mean the 60s. When everywhere you went, you find people mimicking the Black Panthers. I'm saying you go back to Marcus Garvey. The Vietnam guerrilla revolution was inspired by Marcus Garvey. Ho Chi Minh, the founder and general of the Vietnam uprising, the Communist Party in Vietnam, was a Garveyite. And when he heard African for the Africans from Garvey, he thought, why not Vietnam for the Vietnamese? Why are we over there in Vietnam bowing to the French? And you can go back before that. If you look at Haiti, and they called them the Black Jacobins, but Africans were talking freedom long before the French colonizers were. And the French and the European peasantry. So Africans have been influencing freedoms and been taking a stance and have been the standard for principled, militant, and nonviolent resistance across the world. Across the world. And we so humble in that, we even say, what's some callers say, well, Dr. King was like, well, I got my inspiration for nonviolence for Jesus Christ. And I got my strategic application of nonviolence from that racist pedophile, Mahatma Gandhi. He was wrong about that. But hey, that's how humble we are. We like to spread it around. We were always international in our struggle. You know, that came from us. That a threat to justice, I mean, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. That came from us. So now you got us imitating the Trumpites, the white nationalists, the white right wing, being protectionist, being isolationist, saying, we only care about our freedom. Number one, you ain't gonna get free if the world ain't free. Just ask Castro. Castro went and liberated Cuba, but because it was literally and figuratively a small island of socialism surrounded by an ocean of capitalism and oppression, they had to set up a police state, a hierarchical, religious, and rigid, and socialism became more of a cult than a practical system. Socialism for socialism's sake, not socialism for the sake of the people. It was greatly corrupted. And truth be told, if I was in that same position, I would have probably done the same thing. Because you got, you know, 1,000 assassinations attempts. The U.S. was blowing up and poisoning their agriculture, blowing up their infrastructure, killing their civilian populations. And when people come under repression, they're going to get hardened. They're going to become distrustful. They're going to become hostile. So even if we go and find and establish some African state, if we still got capitalism, Zionism, oppression all over the world, and we've got this little state, that state is going to be under perpetual siege, and it won't be able to live up to its real goals and to its real potential, because the main priority is just when you're fighting for existence, you can't thrive. Just look at our brothers and sisters on the South Side. You know, you can't really thrive if you're just surviving. There's a big difference to just being alive and actually developing and cultivating yourself and thriving, as opposed to just trying to hold it together. So our revolutionary, just if for selfish reasons, we have to stand against any identified system of oppression anywhere in the world, no matter who's subjected to. You will even find Black people even expressing support for the Republican Army, for their fight against the British colonization of Africa, of Ireland. You say, well, Ireland is one of the few European countries that never held an African colony or attempted to hold an iron African nation under colonization. Now, of course, they couldn't. I'm sure if they weren't colonized them damn self, they would have got in on the hustle. I'm pretty sure. I'm almost 100% confident of that. But we deal with what is, not what was. And identifying their internal conflicts gives us a better understanding, because we have a lot of African people who think they did it because I'm black. They invaded Africa because we black. They enslaved us because we black. But then you'd be like, wait, but look at Ireland. Look at the Roma. Look at the European Jews. Look at the Slavic people. You know. So, no, they did it to themselves. It ain't got nothing to do. This ain't about our, it's not just about our vulnerability. It's about also their fundamental culture. Or who said it? I think Paul Mooney. No, it wasn't. It was Dick Gregory. He said, somebody got to be the nigga. They got to have a nigga. You can't be a white man without a nigga. The nigga, if the nigga, if we stop being niggas, they're going to make somebody else the nigga. And Dick Gregory said they even turn their own, make their women be the nigga, make their children be the nigga. But their whiteness is rooted. The very concept, the identity of whiteness is rooted in opposition to an oppression of the other. You know, so if I don't have a nigga, I got to speak. If I ain't got to speak, I'll have me a wop, a guinea, a heeb. They'll find their people who look just like them, have the same biological, genetic, evolutionary, cultural heritage as them, and then start attacking them for some made up reason. And so if we start to highlight and taking a principled stance in their internal struggle, because guess what? Whenever African people have a struggle, white people always take a side. They always insert themselves in our struggles, and they don't insert themselves in our struggle to benefit the ones they take the side of. They insert themselves in our struggle for their own benefit. Like, here's two black factions fighting each other in our interest. Is it in our interest to perpetuate that fight? Is it in our interest to end that fight? Is it our interest that one side, this side wins or the other side wins? How does this conflict, how do we engage this conflict to serve our interests? But when our oppressors get into a conflict, well, I ain't got nothing to do with it. You know, that's very infantile thinking. Like the tactic of divide and rule only. And I'm just saying this because even if you're not, just say, hey, I don't have the moral or empathetic fortitude or development within myself, within my own heart, to have sympathy or to reach out to another suffering policy. And I really doubt that people are like, I just love black people. Every time it's like, I'm only about black people. You, if you look at people like that, if you examine individuals who take that stance, generally they're, when you find out, I don't care if they ain't black, I don't care. Generally, you'll find that there's whole sections of black people that they don't care about. I mean, these selective giving a damn. You know, I know who my allies are. I know who my enemies are. But I'm a fully developed human with a fully developed psychology, with a fully developed mind. So I'm like, that's an injustice. You know, oh, got the phone call. Hello, caller. You're calling into the Bro Diallo Show. State your name or alias and where you're calling from.
Hey, brother. This is Brother Adolfo calling from Jackson, Mississippi.
Oh, what's up, man? You calling in to tell me I'm an Uncle Tom for expressing sympathy for the plight of the Palestinian in opposition to the Zionist agenda?
Nah. But I did want to say a couple of words on it.
Uh-huh.
It just kind of took, when you were talking, it kind of took me back to when I was in college. They used to always have these little APEC groups and stuff. Israeli student groups always coming to the school and trying to court these black student government association presidents and getting the students on board with the APEC agenda, which in my mind, some of the things they were saying, it was a Zionist agenda. So, and then I've read this in several places over the years, but I see that they even court these Negro preachers too. So they get in there and tell other black people that, oh, you got to support Israel because this is the promised land and all of this stuff that's rooted in the Bible. And so it's a lot of madness. Now, I can't explain that for people who claim to be conscious. I really don't know why they would support such a thing besides just being backwards. But I know many of our people, they get snatched up by these different Israeli interest groups, lobbying groups, and they just carry the organization line to other black people. So
what's even worse than that?
Think about that.
But what even worse than that? Because I mean, is the every time you turn around, you got Beyonce or you know Bobby Brown, you got some black celebrity going to Israel. And Bethlehem, and they pretend like it's on some Christian stuff, but you got a lot of black celebrities, which I think have more sway than even, you know, black politicians, you know, and black scholars that get with that. And yes, they have always sought to make sure, because like I said, you know, if you can get black folks on your side, then, you know, that's a certain level of legitimacy. For your struggle,
right.
Because black people have been the paragons of liberation and revolutionary struggles, you know, dating
right.
all the way back, you know, to the late 1700s, you know,
right.
And black people were up until Obama, for the first time in U.S. history, black people were actually moved to the right of the white population in terms of supporting repressive policies of the state, because black people supported Obama's efforts in Syria and Libya at a higher rate, percentage-wise, than white people did. And that had never happened before. Black people always were at least skeptical, if not in open opposition, to U.S. imperialist agendas, more so than any other demographic in the United States. So we've even been compromised by Obama's election, that we really thought, we demonstrated that, hey, if you give us the reins of power, or if you give us the illusion that we have the reins of power, we are can be as fully fascist, genocidal, imperialist as, you know, the whites who preceded us, which is very shameful. You know, so and the Israel lobby, because you mentioned AIPAC, which stands for the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, which is a think tank and a lobbying group. They develop policies and then they advocate and impose and put money behind those policies. And every single politician from the Congressional Black Caucus, you know, embraces AIPAC and bows to AIPAC. And the one black politician who didn't, what's her name? Cynthia McKinney.
Right.
She's like, I'm not going to bow. I'm not a representative of Israel. You know, I represent my constituents. And for my local constituents, doesn't serve my constituents' interest to represent AIPAC or the Israeli or Zionist agenda, and I won't do it. And they went and got some Negro who would get in line and ran her and funded her to get Cynthia out of office.
So we, we draw the districting lines too,
yeah,
to kind of take a part of her
yes.
her base up.
Yeah, because we messed up and sent a principled woman. We sent a principled black woman, an intelligent, principled black woman to the Congress. We messed up. Yeah, that ain't the place for principled black folks, you know.
Right.
But I'm going to change that when I'm elected president.
You got run, brother?
I just was given some of my policy platform. Now, somebody just told me I could never be president, you know.
Yeah, so I saw it.
I'm just going to run to prove her wrong. I'm going to resign 2 days after the election, so.
Yeah, man, people, and you were mentioning earlier, talking about black leadership and black people supporting folks just because they black. I've been trying to talk to people, and I'm trying to tell them what certain Negroes are doing, but they just like, no, we got to support them if they black, because we don't stand up for our own. Who going to stand up for? I'm like, they not standing for you. They not standing for black people. What are you talking about? They doing the bidding of their masters. If they got a beef with them and their masters, let them and their masters deal with it.
Exactly.
They don't got nothing to do with us.
Yeah. Hey, man, I think the highest example of that is the Cosby case. You know, nothing right. made me more miserable than to see black folks rally behind a Negro who spent their lives subverting black people and tearing black down black people. You know.
And they jumped through so many hoops to do it.
Yeah.
They conspired against a black man.
Right. Crazy. Which, hey, listen. Like I said, I think white folks did us a solid when they subverted Cosby and kept him from getting his own TV station. If that is the case, I think they did us a solid. And those women who accused Cosby of rape, what they don't understand is they took a black man who has committed $1 billion worth of his resources into rearticulating and validating all of the anti-black stereotypes and anti-black ideologies. You know, Cosby was very harmful to us. You know, Cosby was at the forefront of the 90s when they more than doubled the black incarceration rate during the welfare reform era. It was black individuals like him who gave validation to those agendas, to undermining all of the civil rights reforms and the set aside and the social safety net and the welfare infrastructure. Individuals like Cosby gave validation to individuals like Bill Clinton to do irrevocable harm to the black community. He wasn't just a comedian. He was a cultural icon, you know.
Right. And when I, in
the 90s, when I was going against Cosby, speaking against Cosby, opposing Cosby's ideas, his stance, going around lying on poor black people, everybody was like, you hate success. You got a poverty mentality. You want to blame the white man for everything, you know. And so I was hating on Cosby back when, you know, they were still taping new episodes of The Cosby Show. I realized how detrimental he was. And his ilk, you know, for lack of a better word, he was a member of the Black Boule. And he carried out the Black Boule agenda without hesitation. And he did so. And what black people betraying us is not something that I really get bent out of shape about. It's been too consistent over history. Black treasonous black folks, don't get me bent out of shape. But treasonous black people that have the support of the black community, that breaks my freaking heart.
Well, that's what I was about to say. There needs to be the people that claim that they conscious is supposed to be up trying to teach somebody something.
They ain't woke, they just flipped the pillow. People flip the pillow over and they got a new sensation. It's cooler. And they think they done woke up. They ain't up. You just flipped the pillow and went right back to sleep. You know.
Yeah.
So, and it's like, because if you look at Clarence Thomas is treasonous. But I don't really get bent out of shape because nobody supports Clarence Thomas. Nobody's telling little black children grow up and be like Clarence Thomas.
I said initially they were supporting this song.
Oh, yeah, with Anita Hill. True. But yeah. at this moment. At this epoch. Yeah,
we always talk about weight. Come on now. We got to support them because they black. Just waiting.
It's certain black people that don't even get that. That Sheriff Clark, ain't nobody going to say that about him. Let's give our people a little credit. Ain't nobody going to say that. But so is Clarence Thomas. Who you saying?
Yeah, but he had been one.
But no, when Clarence Thomas.
Took a closer look at him.
But Clarence Thomas didn't emerge on the national stage until, you know, when the first George Bush was elected to office, and this is prior to 92. So what is this, like 89, 88, when Clarence Thomas was nominated to replace Thurgood Marshall? We didn't know Clarence Thomas. I had first heard about him during the Supreme Court hearings. I didn't know who he was before that. So you can't say black folks supported on a national scale, supported Clarence Thomas. All we knew was he was taking Thurgood Marshall's seat. Thurgood Marshall was a civil rights icon. So he's taking his seat. So we didn't know. And then he got on in front of the U.S. Senate and said, I'm under a digital lynching. And black people were like, oh, yeah, he's talking. He's keeping it real. Digital lynching. And they really attacked Anita Hill and supported Clarence Thomas. But since he's been on the bench and he showed his true colors, he don't have no broad base of black support. Come on now. Don't lie on us like that.
No, I didn't say that. But what I'm saying is, why why would we even, we couldn't look at, I was a baby in arms, so I can't really speak on it, but we didn't have anybody who knew what this man was.
Of course.
We got to wait till they do the damage.
Yeah, well, it's kind of hard because everybody has detractors. You know, if I emerged on the national stage tomorrow, wouldn't it be people who knew, oh, brother, Diallo ain't this, he ain't that, and talk bad. So you got to take that with a grain of salt. But it was a Supreme Court nominee, and it's pretty mundane. It's really, you know, back then the court wasn't as highly politicized as it is now. So people weren't paying too much attention. The people, only reason Clarence Thomas confirmation got so much attention because it was sex. They were sitting on the Senate floor talking about Long John Silver, who was a porn star from the 70s, you know, and so it was salacious. Other than that, people don't pay that much attention to the nomination process. I mean, Congress, they do hundreds of hearings and approve and question hundreds of nominees. And unless you're like a real political junkie, people don't pay that much attention to it. So even when like, oh, George Bush is appointing Clarence Thomas, another black man for the black seat. And people are like, oh, whatever. And then, it was like some woman came out and was like, yo, he said he had a big penis and wanted to put it on me. And he sexually harassed me. And then everybody's like, oh, wait, what, huh? Supreme Court? Yes, I'm interested now. But I didn't really know because I was rather young then, too. So I was pretty wet behind the ears at that time, too. I was just a preteen. But I do remember Anita Hill, and I do remember how she was viciously attacked. But I don't really hold it against our people for not knowing just how absurdly vicious and how unapologetically anti-black Clarence Thomas would be. I mean, damn, we should have had a little hint the fact that, you know, George Bush daddy, Big Daddy Bush, appointed him to the position. But I mean, damn, I didn't even know they was manufacturing that grade of Negro no more. I thought that model was obsolete.
Yeah.
Oh, but then that's kind of getting off my point is you have black people that are treasonous that don't have a wide base of support in the black community. But then you have black treasonous black people that have aggressive, enthusiastic support from the larger black community. And the latter is what really, really gets my goat. So I don't care about you being an Uncle Tom. I do care if the community supports or gets behind or is blind to your treason. That's when it really is most damaging.
But I
suspect we're going to be producing treasonous Negroes all the way up to and through the liberation struggle. And even after we on the other side of liberation, there'll still be some black folks trying to crawl back on the plantation.
I guess it's just a part of it, man.
Oh, and what was you telling me? You sent me a link about what's going on. What's your brothers in arms doing? What's your colleagues doing down in Mississippi, man?
I was just they folks was up in arms about this white legislator down here. He said that the legislature that or whoever passed whatever to take down the Confederate memorials in Louisiana, New Orleans, that they should be lynched or something like that. And everybody was up in arms about that, and he was saying that he was going to make sure that didn't happen in Mississippi. He'll fight very hard to make sure that don't happen in Mississippi, and people got mad about it. I was just like, that's what he do worse than that in the legislature, probably.
Right.
Then it's worse, but it was some black attorney. They had filed a lawsuit saying that a civil rights lawsuit, basically saying that he was trying to conspire to lynch black people or something in Mississippi who would oppose the taking down of Confederate monument, and was asking that the court make him read two books on lynching and do a book report on it and pay their legal fees.
Yeah, y'all talented 10th, man. I don't know.
Talentless 10th.
Y'all need to get it together. Seriously.
He's got people, man. People up to whatever.
But then again,
say I'm hating or something.
These black folks are the leaders, and they're putting black folks' resources and black folks' time into that kind of nonsense. But what do you think about taking down Confederate monuments?
Really, I think it's a symbolic gesture. I think it holds some importance, but I'm more interested in tearing down the system and institutions of white domination that those symbols represent. I'm not against people trying to get those monuments taken down or whatnot, because I know that for some people it invokes a memory of a time past that was very harsh for our people. Well, it should invoke those memories for us all if we study the history on it. But to me, it's symbolic. But I won't attack anybody who is about doing it.
Can you tell me then? Because let's say I go to a rally and I want to take down a statue of Jefferson Davis, right? But then I go to a store and pull out a piece of currency with Thomas Jefferson or George Washington on it and buy me some orange drink and some Red Hot Cheetos.
Right.
Can you please inform me? Because maybe I don't know history as well as I thought I did. Can you tell me how the Confederacy was so much worse than the Union? How the Confederate States of America were any different than the United States of America? Could you probably make, because maybe I don't know history as well as I did.
Nah,
because
that's what,
right,
that
when I go down
argument.
The lakeshore, when I drive down the lakeshore here in Chicago up north, where we civilized and forward and integrated up north, where we ain't have slavery way up north, right? I see a huge 100-foot statue of Christopher Columbus in this area we call the Columbus Circle. And I don't know a Confederate that's worse than Cristobal Colon. So maybe you tell me, since you down there in the belly of the Southern beast, in what way was the Confederate States of the United States, which never congealed, which never existed really, but the attempt to construct and the symbology of the Confederate States of America any worse than the United States? How is Jefferson Davis so much worse than Thomas Jefferson?
I don't think that there is any difference. And when folks really started talking about taking down the flag in Mississippi, which includes the Confederate flag, that was my argument. I'm like, well, take all the damn flag down, black people, then. You shouldn't be, because you got black people that protest holding the American flag in protest to the Confederate flag when the same people back both of them, really, at certain points. So I'm like, man, whatever. But I don't get into arguments with people about it, because they get very emotional and very angry and start talking about, oh, we doing this work, you ain't doing no work. If you ain't going to do nothing, then just be quiet. So I just leave it alone. You know, if that's what people want to do, then that's on them. I don't get involved with it too much. But to your point, it's no difference. It's no difference.
Right. And here's the thing. Here's the thing. What I don't understand about black folks, right? The Civil War lasted what, about 5 years,
right?
Like 1861 to 1865. Now,
right.
Under that time, African people, because the Confederate States of America had broke off from the U.S., right? They had their own constitution, they had their own president, they had their new capital, the Confederate States of America. In theory, it only lasted about 5 years. Maybe four. I think 4 years. We were enslaved under the damn Union Jack, under the U.S. flag, for over 200 years.
Right.
So why are we so bent out of shape about something that lasted 4 years? A flag that lasted 4 years. When we were still enslaved under the stars and stripes, even now. I just don't understand. It blows my mind. But I guess we about to get Harriet
far,
Tubman
man.
On the 20s.
They're
going to
say you're going too far. If you don't like America, then you should just go back.
If you don't like Confederacy, should you not just leave the South? If I don't like America and I should go back to Africa, if you don't like the Confederacy, should you move up to New York? Come up here and get some of this. Come to Chicago and get some of this biting, unpleasant cold. Go to New York and herd rats?
Maybe, man.
There's options.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Right.
Well, like, I try. Man, I be wanting to join with my people. I be wanting to join stuff. Like, bring down that flag. I just couldn't. I mean, some of that, I have to think to myself, whenever y'all get involved, whenever you black folks start to get a movement going, I have to ask myself, would I be more productive sitting at home playing Xbox or doing this? And most of the time, the Xbox wins. Because y'all, I mean, there's so much time, and I really honor black people that want to do something positive. But why do something stupid? You can do something positive and intelligent. And I just don't understand this animosity, African people, because number one, the Confederacy lost the war, and the Confederacy has no official power. And every white person that's doing harm to us through the system is doing harm to us. The cops are working and living and operating under the U.S. Constitution. You know, the United States, like Republic of the United States. Power. So we're being oppressed not by the symbols of the Confederacy, but by the federal government of the United States, by the state governments and by the local governments. Of the people that won the war are oppressing us, not the people that lost the war. Well, so why not?
The way that it's been explained to me, now I don't agree with this rationale. People say this is the way to bring people into the movement, bring them into consciousness because the masses are interested in this and you got to stand with the people. And the people say they want to do something. You need to be there to kind of guide them and help raise the contradiction and start the other conversations like the one that you and I are having right now. But that never happened, so I don't know what they're talking about.
And
they never raise any larger contradictions.
They're not raising
the
contradiction.
About the US flag and the,
right.
So
they're not raising the contradiction. They're validating the contradiction. They are the contradiction. I gotta raise them because they are the contradiction.
Right.
And to tell black folks that our oppression is being carried out. Oh, okay. The Civil War lasted 4 years, 3 weeks, and 6 days. So even if you say the Confederates oppressed black folks, they only were able to oppress us for 4 years, 3 weeks, and 6 days. Now, the United States government has been oppressing us since 1776, between 1776 and 2017.
Right.
And any black person, any white person that aggresses against blacks and gets away with it, they haven't done it under the Confederate States of America. They've done it under the U.S. Constitution, the Democratic Republic of the United States. So the symbols, I don't care what symbols you are, what actual laws do you function under? So even when a white boy waves a swastika in your face, he's doing so under the U.S. Constitution, not under the Nazi regime. The Third Reich is gone, and there has not been a Fourth Reich erected. So he's not oppressing you under the Third Reich. He's oppressing you under the U.S. Constitution. And you know, it's lawyers, people like you, people with letters after their names, conceiving of these plans and carrying them out. Is this just busy
work? You're right. You're right about that. You absolutely right. And it's a shame. Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it.
Oh, no, interrupt me away. I mean, I got like 45 interruptions in the bank, so 45-1. I'm still winning.
But you're right. These are the main people who will say these things and be screaming at me. Confederate symbol, do, man. Man, look, I'm not about to continue to argue with you about this. I make my points, and then I'll move on. I ain't going to keep talking to you about it, because then I start getting into, oh, you people like you, you're so ideologically pure that you do nothing. You just stand on the sideline and critique everybody.
Yeah.
Just because I'm not doing that, I don't do nothing? Come on, man.
I hear you. Well, it's time for the outro music. You didn't walk this down. I was about to give black folks the solution to everything, but you called in. So I guess we'll have to wait another
Friday.
Few days.
Friday.
I'll find out a reason not to tell it then, too. But I really appreciate your input. And I'm glad that I'm not the only dude, because I haven't even spoken publicly about taking down the Confederate monuments. I just can't always be the boogeyman, you know. So I appreciate now that you have to carry that burden along with me. You know, hater one, hater two. But anyway, bro.
All right.
I appreciate you calling in. We getting out of here. Band Nation is in the building, and I'll see y'all Friday morning. All right, bro, Diodolfo. Send my love to all y'all Mississippi and everybody, all the rest of the black folks still there. All right.
All right, bro.
All right, bro. Peace. All right, that's Bro Diallo's show. We'll be back Friday live, and we're going to pick up again about what revolutionary leadership is supposed to look like and how we can construct and implement truly revolutionary leadership. And I'll finish my talk on why black people should support the Palestinian struggle in opposition to the Zionist state, the Zionist agenda, and global, and how that all ties into global white oppression and opposition to black liberation. Bro Diallo Show, Q4 Radio, AM 1680.